So thank you, first of all, for meeting with me. And can you begin by introducing yourself and talking a bit about what your academic research is and when and how you became interested in feminist scholarship?
Oh, well, I'm Homa Hotfar, as you know. I'm an anthropologist, but I actually come from interdisciplinary background. I was interested in political economy and its relationship to women. But as I studied, I thought I have to do economics. But then I did economics and I thought, oh, they're doing modeling and all these things, nothing to do with women. So I came and did my master in sociology of development. But I was looking at rural, urban, migrant, low-income women, and particularly those who came from the rural area in the city, how they adjust, and whether actually the modernization does make them feel more liberated in terms of decision-making, freedom, in terms of marriage, customary laws, in terms of their relationship with the husbands, in-laws, and society. This was my interest from when I was a teenager. And then, of course, I realized if I'm in anthropology, I can actually do field work and collect information, the kind of information I'm interested in. So then from sociology of development, I switched my PhD into social anthropology. And today I teach anthropology as well as do anthropology. So that's how my teaching is. I'm interested, of course, in a lot of issues, especially women in politics and it's the role it may have in the situation of women. But my research, since I was part of the network from rather very early on, before network was formally formed, because my sister was one of the very 9 women who set the organization up. And I was part of the negotiation, but the final stages I had gone to Cairo to do my field work for my doctorate. And so since then, I have been working really on issues of politics. And I believe research has to be relevant to policy and action. I categorize myself as an academic at the service of civil society. Within that, of course, at the service of women's movement, because I see myself as part of the women's movement. And I think you can do advocacy without good information. But also if you collect good information but you don't put it in use, there's not much benefit. I mean, there's intellectual satisfaction, but your society doesn't necessarily benefit from the research you do. And since part of the funding for most of our research doesn't come from our personal account, it comes from public money or university time, but it should really benefit women at large. So I see myself really in that light. So I do research that I see is relevant to activism, and it can be at the service of activists. So I'm kind of in between being an activist and academic.
Okay. So you said you got involved with the Women Living Under Muslim Laws Network through your sister.
Yeah, well, what happened is earlier on, of course, with the Iranian Revolution, since I'm Iranian, and I had always been wanting to, I always discussed women's issue and women's right, but in Iran at the time, gender was not politicized, and people often told me, it's just too keen, we don't have democracy, and you keep just talking about women. They didn't really realize the importance of that until revolution happened. After revolution, when situation of women in Iran, at least the legal situation, got really bad, then people started to work on women. At that time, both my sister and I were graduate students at Manchester University here. And so we were very active in the debates on women's issues, especially in the Muslim context and all that. Then Katayun went to Amsterdam in the first Women and Health meeting. That's where she met Maria May, and they discussed setting up a network and giving support to each other as an activist. At that time, there was none of these really there are grants and a kind of organization that support academic at risk or activists at risk. But at that time, there were a lot of women activists who were in jail because of their activism in Iran. But we had really no source, and that didn't really being even categorized as a for political refugees, because that was not recognized as a political activity, even though women were being put in jail and some of them were executed in Iran. So we, Maria May and Kata Yun, had talked about this network that we had been also talking. I mean, the talk about it had been actually since at least 1979 there, but Maria May had a vision of actually actualizing all these, like, almost dream, like we were graduate student and this was like an idealistic vision in some way. But Maria May had the vision to put this in practice and make it happen, which in 1984, when we had a meeting in early 1984, we had a meeting in Canterbury. She had come to give a talk in Canterbury because Katarina and I at that time didn't have a passport to travel. And we discussed, I clearly remember, I told Maria May, this is wonderful, but we are not going to be able to do it. We are in exile. Yourself, me, Kata Yun, and two other women that we knew, Sudanese, and we don't even have enough resources to pay our rent. And so how are we going to do this organization? She said, well, we can start, we do as much as we can, and if we couldn't, we'd tell our daughter we tried, we couldn't do it, now you do it. But if we just say we can't and we don't try, what are we going to tell them? Where they end up in worse situation than we have been. And I thought, well, power to you, okay, if you want to go ahead and do it, I support and I join you. But I really, like at that time, we happily talked about it, but I didn't see that it's happening. It will last, I thought it was going to be a year or two, then everybody gets tired. At some stage we didn't, like I remember we had to mail like maybe 25 letters. And the money for the stamps, we didn't have. I think mid-1984. Well, we hadn't paid our rent, but thankfully it was university, so they didn't throw us out. But, I mean, there was that situation. But Maria May stuck with it, and she put a lot of energy, and this happened. When it lasted, you know, when it went through the first few years, then, of course, situation changed, like we felt, okay, maybe we can do it, maybe it is possible. But it really was the vision of Maria May that let's do it, not talk about it. Let's stop dreaming, let's put our dreams in action. And so that's how I became part of it.
And so right now, obviously, a lot's happened since the 80s, and what do you think is the priority for the network right now?
Well, that's the problem. I think if at that time we would say there was one major priority, and it was laws, family law in particular, because we felt a lot of rights women gain in the constitution, or even when we make a culture of women being able to do things, if the legal situation takes it out away from them, especially through marriage law, because marriage law, like suddenly in a Muslim marriage, especially women become subject to their husband's permission and all of that, we thought that was a priority. And the women who participated in our first exchange, that was their priority. But I feel today that still is a priority, unfortunately, 20 years later, 25 years later. But also there are, like, I think women in politics is a priority, talking about women's human rights in particular, you know, not just saying generally women human rights, but women's human rights is a priority. In some way, I feel, despite all the debates and despite a lot of the gains, there are also a lot to be done. And so I wouldn't say, I think everything, I think is still, I think legal situation is important. So is the culture. So the legal change and culture change is still a priority, and it covers a whole lot of range of issues, which is of course maybe different from one context to another. But the core of it is the same, is women's human rights. And I feel, especially for countries that are very concerned about development or democracy, that you can't have development and democracy if 50% of population are not going to enjoy the same rights and the same benefit of development. For instance, in Iran, all these progressive opposition forces, they keep saying, we have to establish democracy, and once we have democracy, then we make sure women have the rights. And my argument with them is, you cannot have democracy if women do not have rights. You cannot say women's rights should wait until they have democracy, because you will never have democracy if women don't have rights. And this is a problem we have with a lot of political activists and progressive people, because they don't still see the importance of women's rights. So I think it's important for organizations like Volume, like other women's organizations, to keep their independence, because as long as they keep saying these are important, they don't become subject to political party program. And that's the only way we can push forward.